Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Well, there is, as usual, so much to catch up on in the world of new media and social media, especially with the London Games being declared the Twitter Olympics. So to take us through that and much more, here's our Open House guru, Steve Krieger. Steve, welcome back.
Thanks, Lee. Good to be back.
Thank you. Steve, social media has played much more of a role in this Olympics this time around than ever before, for good, but also for not so good. Let's take the good first.
Yeah, absolutely. Social media has been huge these Olympics. On the side of good, we've been able to, through social media, get access to a whole lot more information than we've ever seen before, behind the scenes, what's been happening at the events, getting insights into the life of the athletes. Social media has also provided people with a more direct line of communication with the athletes. So, you know, in the past we had herograms, you know, you'd put in your voice message or you'd write a letter and it would go off to the Olympic Village and then pass it on to the athletes. Now, through social media, anyone is able to pass on their direct message of encouragement straight to the athlete via Twitter. And that's changed the nature of how we engage and communicate with athletes like we've never seen before.
Which is great for us and also good for them, as long as we're supportive and as long as it's not putting too much pressure. But it's been very clear over this last week that this is adding a really big new pressure to some of these athletes already under extreme pressure.
Well, that's right. I mean, they've come to these games and they've been built up over time. You know, the weight of a nation is on your shoulders, and we've seen this with James Magnussen and Emily Seaburn this week. They've really felt this weight of expectation as their fans, their followers, other Australians have been contacting them and on the whole really just giving them their support. But that support has turned into a whole lot more pressure as they've felt thousands of their fellow Australians kind of sharing how much they want them to win that gold medal. And we've seen the disappointment in their faces and through Emily, as she's been quite upset in those press interviews, that they've received silver, but in their mind and through the expectations of their supporters, they really had wanted to get that gold medal more than anything.
Both Emily and James are very much of this kind of social media generation, and yet we forget how young they are and clearly how ill-equipped I think they've been by some of those around them to cope with this kind of pressure, which is a new pressure.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, even if you look back to the Sydney Games, I mean, social media really, you know, wasn't around. Twitter was a long way off, and Twitter is the channel that has been getting most of the attention these games. There was no opportunity to communicate with athletes. Grant Hackett talked about his efforts at the Sydney Games, and the way that he tuned out was just to stop reading the newspaper. You know, who's reading the newspaper now?
It's a very good point.
These athletes have grown up with this media. It's the way, I think, there's a flip side as well. You can really get your identity from the way that people are talking about you, which is why social media is so addictive. But it also adds, as we've talked about, this pressure to perform, because so much of your identity can be built up by what people think of you and how you're doing.
Especially when, as we've seen also this past week, the social media turns savage, nasty.
Yeah, and this is the side of social media that we continue to see something of. So we had the British diver, his father had died of cancer last year, and he said that he was diving for his father. He wanted to do his father proud. He didn't get the gold medal, and then someone on Twitter commented that he'd let his father down. I mean, it's just savage and completely uncalled for. But this is an element of social media that some people may be unfamiliar with, that there are people out there whose sole goal is to upset others. They're not looking for reasonable conversation. They're not even unreasonable types of people. They exist to cause grief and distress to others. And this is, you know, what was picked up on with this incident with the diver, Tom.
But it's also meant big trouble for a couple of the athletes themselves with their use of Twitter.
Oh, well, that's right. I mean, we saw this before the Games with our own Nick Darcy, you know, posing with those guns, and those photos got up on Facebook, and then he was banned from using social media. We had the Greek triple jumper who posted a message up on Twitter mocking African immigrants. We had a Swiss footballer who referred to South Koreans as a bunch of mongoloids. Brazilian judo fighter was abused via Twitter after her defeat. So Twitter just keeps on coming throughout these games as both a means of distress and a way of receiving discouragement.
All of which ties in nicely into a timely article, I think, on how to regain some kind of control over the social media frenzy lots of people are feeling. This is from psychology professor at California State University, Larry Rosen. First, tell us about his diagnosis.
Yeah, so he's coined this phrase called eye disorder, where he contends that through the use of technology, people are manifesting more symptoms of narcissism and obsessive-compulsive disorder and social phobias and hypochondria and other, as he says, psychiatric maladies. So all these things of the mind that are to do with self are becoming far more exaggerated because of social media.
But he makes the point that technology doesn't make us crazy, but it may exacerbate our crazy tendencies or develop them. Where's the dividing line?
Yeah, I think it's a tricky question. Yeah. I mean, I think as human beings, our focus naturally is on ourselves. We are naturally selfish and self-interested creatures. What he has noticed is that with as future generations develop, each generation is increasingly has increasingly higher levels of anxiety when they are separated from technology, and so the more that people are using technology, the more anxiety develops. So it kind of goes round and round in circles. Perhaps we'll see in the future a greater training and awareness of the good uses of social media and also how it affects us so we can manage its use better.
Yes. One interesting thing he has to say is that nobody, regardless of age, regardless of gender, is really that good at multitasking, because there are a lot of us who think we are in this day and age.
Well, that's right. I don't know. I think this myth of multitasking is fast becoming debunked, particularly as we see just how ineffective we are at doing multiple things on the computer at once. Mm. Social media just continues to take our attention away. And so, you know, this professor, Larry Rosen, argues that, you know, we want to keep encouraging people to use social media, but do it in set breaks throughout the day rather than kind of keeping your Twitter feed or your Facebook page open the whole time, because we're simply not able to concentrate on two things at once. In fact, you know, the research that I've seen suggests that whenever you're interrupted, be it from Twitter or even just a colleague kind of, you know, knocking on your door, it takes 30 minutes to get back in the zone of where you were before you were interrupted.
Yeah.
And so that multitasking really just splits your attention multiple ways rather than helping you to do lots of things at once.
So he's not saying switch it all off, but take a break, tech break.
That's right. Again, yeah, be aware of how you use it and then slot it into periods throughout the day so that you're not spending all of your time on social media, because it will distract you. And I think, you know, a lot of people would realise this, that you could spend a lot of time on Facebook and you realise at the end of it, what have I actually done? You know, like I kind of know a bit more about what people are doing, but it's not a particularly productive use of time. So slot in those times for social media engagement, but don't have the window open all day long.
The larger question is, and you mentioned the I word before, a question of identity. What do we say about where our identity is or should be infinitely beyond social media, I suppose?
That's right. I mean, I think the question that social media keeps asking is, you know, who am I? And it provides us with an opportunity to shape our identity. We produce tweets, we produce Facebook status updates, we upload photos, all wanting to push out to the world an image of who we are. We want to shape that image. And then in return, we feel something about ourselves based on how people engage with us and what they say about us and the number of likes or comments that we receive on a Facebook post. And I think this is, you know, this is a challenge to our identities, but as a Christian, something that I continue to remind myself of is the fact that my identity is not founded in what other people think of me or even in what I think of myself, but in what God thinks of me, what God has done for me, in how God feels towards me. God's love for me expressed through, ultimately through the death and resurrection of Jesus, that unconditional, unchangeable, indestructible love gives me a great identity that surpasses any of these changing fads and conditional kind of opinions that others might have of me. And that's what, you know, we have to continue to return to rather than allowing these, you know, varying voices in the world to speak to us.
After what I've seen over the last week, I say thank the Lord for that.
Yes.
Before I let you go, Steve, there is also in the new media, social media world, a new app, as if we've needed one. It's an interesting prospect for families, though. Tell us about that one.
That's right. So there's a new website out. It's called Family Leaf. It's part of a whole bunch of websites, actually, that are trying to carve out a niche similar to Facebook, but directed at families. So they're a place for families to have their own little online space where they can have discussions and share photos and keep up with family news. Some of them allow you as well to kind of, you know, upload your family tree and talk about upcoming and past family events. The big benefit of these websites is that for people who are perhaps less tech savvy and, you know, they may not be as familiar with Facebook, or for people who are just a little bit wary about Facebook and how it uses their information, or for people who don't want to share all the information to the world but just want to communicate within their family network, these little websites are providing a way for people to do that. It's a great way to keep in touch with family members who might be scattered across the globe without having to use that Facebook platform.
So do you reckon it might catch on in the shadow of the social media gorillas of things like Facebook and Twitter?
Oh, look, I think there's a challenge there because people probably, you know, have got enough accounts they're trying to manage and profiles and networks. But, you know, one of my big thoughts is that people will become increasingly suspicious of some of these social media companies as they try to monetize our information. And
yes.
So I think some of these smaller networks in the future will become more popular as people become a bit more wary, potentially, of how other bigger networks use their information.
Steve Krieger, I'm so glad you join us every few weeks on Open House. Thanks again, mate.
It's a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.